The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
If instead Putin doubles down, then so shall we, further ratcheting up economic pressure and supporting Ukraine with finance.
Sanctions have to be as powerful as they can possibly be. We will be pushing the government to go further and faster.
We could have a massive miscalculation and we will then be in a full-scale war across the globe.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. Coming up on today's programme, we're taking a deep dive into Northern Ireland's politics and the UK's row with Brussels over the protocol. We'll get the latest from our reporter in Dublin, hear from the deputy leader of Northern Ireland's Alliance Party, Stephen Farry, and hear a view on the way forward for unionism with the Professor Peter Sherlow, who is director of the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies.
So the threat of a major showdown with the European Union remains. The Foreign Secretary Liz Truss has reiterated a threat to scrap parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol, saying it's a matter of internal peace and security. This after talks with the EU's Brexit negotiator. Speaking today, the Irish Prime Minister Michael Martin says that the UK government wants seems to change, and the goalposts keep on changing.
Meanwhile, the DUP leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, says that his party will not support the election of a new speaker in Stormont today. The party is refusing to jointly govern with the nationalist group Sinn Féin until its concerns over the Brexit arrangements are addressed. Now, that legislation, of course, dictates checks on some goods crossing the Irish Sea.
Well, let's start off the programme with an update from Bloomberg's reporter Peter Flanagan, who joins us from our Dublin office. Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Bloomberg Westminster. Now, just talk us through where things stand with the protocol.
Yeah, so with the protocol at the moment, essentially the British government and the EU are something out of standoff. And the British government has long argued that the protocol needs to be changed or to be removed, as you said, because it's, you know, disrupting trade between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. It undermines Northern Ireland's place within the UK, whereas the EU and the Irish government, along with them, have long argued that, look, this is an international agreement that Boris Johnson's government signed. He knew exactly what it was when he signed the deal, and international agreements must be honoured. The EU has said they can make concessions. I mean, there have been some concessions, some checks have been delayed, but they have been quite adamant that the protocol itself will not be removed.
OK, so this is a standoff. How is that affecting then politics in Northern Ireland? Because, of course, a few days ago we had regional elections, local elections across the UK and including in Northern Ireland.
Yes, so the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, the biggest unionist party in Northern Ireland, which wants Northern Ireland to remain part of the UK, they have said they will not enter the power-sharing government, regional government in Northern Ireland without the protocol and issue being solved, whether or not the protocol being removed in its entirety or what. Now, the thing with the northern, with the regional government in Northern Ireland is that it's a power-sharing assembly. So by the DUP saying they won't enter the government there, that the government cannot function, or the legislature cannot function. So at the moment, the government is essentially being run by civil servants in Northern Ireland. That situation can continue until about November, and then there will have to be new elections in the region if it isn't resolved by then. So essentially, there can be no major decisions made in Northern Ireland until this issue is solved.
Now, Peter, just talk us through the view of the government in Dublin. Now, their line is pretty much the same as Brussels, isn't it? I'm not quite sure if Brussels is following Dublin's line or Dublin's following Brussels, but the two things are one and the same, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I mean, the Irish government has been adamant throughout this process. I mean, going back to immediately after the Brexit vote, that the Irish government has been very careful not to have bilateral negotiations with the UK on this. And, you know, they have said repeatedly through current Prime Minister Micheál Martin and his predecessor Leo Varadkar, we are part of the EU, we follow the EU's line on this, and there can be no kind of separate side deal, if you like. You know, and Micheál Martin yesterday, he really was very clear, you know, the EU has been flexible on this matter throughout, but when the EU has given ground, it hasn't been reciprocated by the UK. The British government has kept on pushing and pushing, essentially. And he even said yesterday, he's not clear exactly what the British government wants out of these talks. The goalposts keep moving, as you said, and he has said before that there is an absence of clarity on what the British government's landing zone is on these talks. So, you know, the Irish government has certainly backed the EU throughout this process.
Okay. So then, where do we go from here, I suppose? The UK has ramped up rhetoric somewhat, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult to say at this point. I mean, as you say, the UK has really ramped things up in the last few days, in the last few weeks even. But we've also been here before. I mean, there have been a few occasions in the past where kind of the language out of London has really kind of increased. The kind of severity of it, if you like, has increased. Only for them to eventually pull back and to somewhat, you could say, back off a little bit. And then, you know, this has been noticed in the past. Ireland's Europe Minister, Thomas Byrne, he said yet last night that he expects the British government to back off and, in his own words, honour an international agreement because that is what they've done before. But on the other side of this, you know, nothing is guaranteed. And, you know, this is arguably the biggest blow-up over the protocol since it was agreed and since it came in. So, I mean, it's one thing to say that the UK government has done this before, only to step back, but that's no guarantee that they won't step back this time.
Peter, just looking slightly further into the distance, what are the chances of a border poll in the north of Ireland? Clearly, Sinn Féin, this is something which they would like to see, and they did come top of the poll at the Stormont elections. Does that bring us any nearer? There are quite a lot of hurdles to getting there, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. I mean, I think, yes, they are the biggest. They did essentially win the elections for the first time, and that has kind of put the issue of United Ireland or a border poll very much back on the political agenda. But the reality is such a poll will be years and years away. There's no prospect of it in the near future. And as a result of the peace agreement, which basically, you know, resolved the issues that caused years of violence in the north back in 1998, It is up to the British government to decide when to call that poll. And the language within the agreement says a poll should only be called if there is a consistent majority for a United Ireland. Now, how that is measured, it doesn't say, whether that's a series of opinion polls or something else. And the British government has said that this is not going to happen anytime soon. So certainly Sinn Féin's victory has put it back on top of the agenda. It's very much in the ether again. But, you know, this is not happening in the next 5 years or anything like that. This is very much a long way away at this point.
Peter, thank you so much for being with us. Great to get you on the programme this morning. That is Bloomberg's Peter Flanagan joining us there from Dublin on the latest when it comes to the Northern Ireland Protocol.
Well, the Alliance Party was one of the big winners in the elections to the Northern Ireland Assembly last week, more than doubling its representation and cementing its place as the third party in Northern Irish politics. It's urging the British government against unilateral action on the protocol.
Now, the Alliance Deputy Leader, Stephen Farry, who is MP for North Down, told us on Bloomberg Westminster that this kind of escalation by the UK government would be a, quote, grossly irresponsible act. Have a listen.
You have heard a lot of rhetoric, and clearly it is escalating. And to be clear, from our perspective, if any of this becomes reality over the coming days and weeks, it would be a grossly irresponsible act on the part of the UK government. It would do enormous damage to Northern Ireland itself, but also it would do huge damage to the UK's international relationships, including their trade agreement with the European Union, and also their relationship with the United States, which is of such importance. And there's a real premium at the moment on international unity as we try to face down Russian aggression against Ukraine. It sends a terrible message in terms of the UK's commitment to upholding its treaty obligations and wider international law. The only way forward is to work with the European Union in a constructive and pragmatic way to address and find solutions to the challenges that have been posed by the Northern Ireland Protocol. But the protocol is there for very particular reasons. It reflects the choices made by both the UK government and the DUP around the nature of Brexit in terms of having a hard Brexit outside the customs union and single market. And with that, there comes inevitably some degree of line on a map, an interface drawn somewhere in these islands to police the interface between the single market of the European Union and the UK's economy. And wherever you draw that line, there will be a degree of friction and some threat to someone's identity. What we can do is mitigate that as far as we can, but we also have to be honest with people that reflects the choices made around Brexit. And there will be a limitation in terms of how far that can ultimately go, but certainly there's pressure out there. The key ingredient in all of... Sorry,
Stephen, I was just going to say, where do you put the blame for the mess over the Northern Ireland Protocol? Because it is a mess, isn't it?
I put the blame entirely with both the UK government and the DUP. People went into Brexit not processing the implications of what it means. And in particular, people charged towards a hard Brexit and turned down other alternatives that maybe would have softened the impact on a place like Northern Ireland. I mean, Northern Ireland only really works through sharing and interdependence. We are part of the island of Ireland. We're also part of the UK. So businesses, people work on a north-south and east-west basis. The problem with Brexit is it comes along and tries to impose simplistic black and white solutions on a situation that requires a degree of complexity, a degree of nuance, some degree of shades of grey to make the situation work effectively. And all of that has been tossed up in the air. The protocol was the soft landing that provides Northern Ireland with a degree of protection. It allows Northern Ireland unfettered access to both the European and GB markets. So there's some degree of opportunity for Northern Ireland. It's not about challenges. But some people just haven't come to terms with the implications of their own choices around Brexit. They haven't addressed the contradictions in terms of their position.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas,
begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Well, the UK has escalated its threats over the post-Brexit deal for Northern Ireland, saying that the European Union's latest proposals on trading arrangements won't work and signalling that the government is prepared to take unilateral steps unless a new deal can be negotiated.
Well, let's focus in now on the future of unionism in Northern Ireland. Joining us now, Professor Peter Sherlow, Director of the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. Peter, thanks so much for joining us on Bloomberg Westminster. Now, talk to us about the threat from the TUV. Now, for people who don't follow Northern Ireland politics, probably worth just explaining the TUV is the most hard line of the unionist parties, isn't it? Talk to us about the threat to the DUP.
Well, you've picked up on a very important point, which is like republicanism and nationalism, unionism is not homogenous. It has different wings. And there is a small party, as you've mentioned, called the Traditional Unionist Voice, which came out of the DUP. Is very evangelical, very opposed to marriage equality, the right of women to control their bodies, and in particular got some wind in their sails over the protocol issue, which they see as a constitutional issue. So the divergence in trade and setting of rules and regulations in the future by Europe is something that particularly exercised them. They clearly got 7% in the most recent election. They returned with one seat, given our STV system. But nonetheless, they damaged DUP fortunes. And clearly, if they hadn't taken a more vociferous, if they hadn't stood in the vociferous way that they did, the DUP probably would have come back with roughly the same number of seats as it did previously.
Yeah, but some of their vote was eroded effectively, and this is why there is now this issue around whether the DUP actually joins in with power sharing again. They've talked about today not budging on this issue and not taking part. I mean, how serious is that? And will it change? I suppose
there's a larger existential problem within unionism, and it's to do with the fact that many people who are pro-union, many who wish to stay in the UK, don't vote for unionist parties. Mm. And the reason they don't vote for unionist parties, so in the society we live in, with this sort of ethnic politics, the mantra had always been for either side to vote to keep the other side out. Now, what's happened within the unionist population is increasingly they won't do that. And the reason why they won't do that is because they are secular. They have very liberal attitudes. The pro-union community is supportive of marriage equality. It's actually more supportive of the right to abortion than the nationalist community. And basically those people have simply drifted away. So the crisis that we're seeing today is not only just a declining vote for political parties within unionism, it's actually that they're out of touch with a very significant share of people who are unionist. So what's happened here has really been a question of painting themselves into questions over the protocol. And as they painted themselves into the corner, they actually demanded more paint. Now, what's important to understand here is the protocol is not properly understood. And unionism has raised issues which are real issues, but it's raised them in a very bad way. It's raised them in a very angry way, and it's raised them in a very dismissive way. So there are two things that are important here. Mm-hmm. One is the movement of goods between Britain and Northern Ireland, which have to be checked so as they don't enter the single market. Okay, so we know the EU will mitigate on this. We know the EU will, they've already said that they reduce paperwork by 50%, and they've already said they'll take away most of the checks on veterinary and movement of animals, etc. So that can some way can be tempered, but there's a bigger issue here, which is actually about rule setting. So in the future, because Northern Ireland's in both the UK market and the EU single market, that rules in the future will be set in Europe. Now, that is seen as a unionist issue, when actually it should be a societal issue. And if I can just explain that very, very quickly. Yeah. Say, for example, Northern Ireland supplies 20% of Great Britain's foodstuff. Now, so in this Ukraine crisis, it's very clear that you need to keep a healthy agribusiness sector in Northern Ireland. Many of the calves that are brought into Northern Ireland come from Great Britain. So say, for example, in the future, Europe breaks in a rule which is not adhered to in Great Britain. So say a growth hormone. Say in Britain you give calves a growth hormone. Those calves that then come to Northern Ireland to be fattened, to be part of the agribusiness sector, could not be moved into the single market. Theoretically, you would destroy the beef industry in Northern Ireland. So what we've got here is a really big problem, in that this is seen as a constitutional issue, when in fact it actually should be seen as a societal issue, a business economics issue. And what we have is the parties, you just had Stephen Farry on.
Yeah.
The Alliance, Sinn Féin and the SDLP at the very start said, implement the protocol, implement the protocol, implement the protocol. Then what happened was civic society and the business sector stood up and said, there are issues with the protocol. So then they shifted into the space of mitigations. We should have mitigations, okay? So the point I'm trying to illustrate to you, and I'm a Remainer, I'm from the pro-union community, but the point I'm trying to really illustrate to you here is, I think everybody's dealing with this in the wrong way, but what we aren't understanding is the future rule setting could decimate parts of the economy of Northern Ireland. So it's not a constitutional issue, of course, it is a constitutional issue. But what's really important here to understand is that this could have long-term economic consequences. And that type of conversation
so that point
not
understood.
Being held.
So I get that point, yes. And also that, though, is something, I suppose people on the other side of the argument might say, but that there hasn't been that much evidence, perhaps, of that, or that there has been a debate around whether or not there's been a direct economic impact from the Northern Ireland Protocol on the Northern Irish economy or not yet. So there are some areas of debate economically about what the impacts are, whether they're good or bad.
Yeah. There's two things. Of course, there's no evidence because most of the sections of the protocol have yet to be implemented. And of course, you will see things like, Northern Ireland businesses are doing very well in terms of export because they have this access, unlike the rest of Great Britain, to the single market. So that's not what I'm saying. In many ways, you cannot create a proper evidence base because aspects of the protocol have yet to be implemented. So that's the first thing. The second thing is Europe has stretched itself in terms of mitigations. As I said, paperwork, 50% reduction, SPS, movement of goods, or livestock, etc., 80% has been reduced there. So I don't think anybody doesn't understand that can be solved. The question here is about the EU making rules in the future over which there is no constitutional right of the UK Parliament or the Assembly to have an influence over those rules being made. So that does create divergence. Now, So what I'm saying is, if you want to have a proper, sober, mature conversation, part of it you've illustrated is problematic because we don't have any evidence. And what I was trying to do is just illustrate these are scenarios that all of the MLAs in Northern Ireland should be taken seriously, because the debate has fallen down along the predictable lines of, if unionists say this, it's wrong. If nationalists and Republicans say this, then that's wrong. And clearly this is just not a sober, proper debate.
Peter, I just want to go back to something you said about the politics in Northern Ireland, about the parties. Is there no place for moderate unionism anymore? You say that the DUP's views are quite out of line with many unionist voters. What happened to the UUP? And have the Alliance now soaked up all of those moderate votes?
So basically what happened was there was a drift. The Alliance Party used to get around 6% of the vote. In 2017, they got 9%. That was, we mapped that at the time. It was a drift of DUP and also unionist voters, especially those who are pro-marriage equality, who moved over to the Alliance. In this election, they got a drift also from the SDLP. It's not just unionism that is losing out in that sense. And what you also have clearly is going back to my previous point, is that when we map this and survey this, and when you look, for example, at the question of a border poll, which is never far away from our elections. When you look at those who don't vote, so in this election, say 35%, okay? When you look at that and you ask the people who didn't vote, what would you do in a border poll? Those who express an opinion are three quarters supportive of staying in the union. What you actually have is a significant section of pro-union voters who just don't vote, who won't engage in constitutional politics, who won't engage in keeping voting for the other side to keep out. And I think one of the things is internationally, when people see the unionist politics, they think the community that sits behind that is homophobic. They think the community that sits behind that is sectarian. They think the community that sits behind that is misogynist. When in fact, in all the surveys we do, they're actually the opposite. So you actually have a political grouping which is severely out of touch with its potential electorate.
So just very briefly, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I mean, speaking internationally, you've got a US delegation potentially coming to Ireland. There is, you know, deep concern around security issues and politics in Northern Ireland. What do you think, though, is the way forwards then? Boris Johnson is apparently going to be making a decision about this potential legislation to ditch the agreement with the EU. Where do you see things going, just briefly?
Well, I just hope it's not going to enter into a trade war, because the thing that people forget is that you can't get rid of the protocol, because if you get rid of the protocol, you effectively get rid of the withdrawal agreement with Europe, and then you're into the realms of a trade war. So the best expectation we can have is this is a bit of saber rattling to try to get further concessions in the negotiations.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated. Member SIPC and NYSE.